F2A, number 22B.
So, here in verse 12, he says, "Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed," you hear it once, the obedience to principle, that the Philippians were obedient to principle, not as in my presence only, not only when he was around them and was watching them, but what pleased him more was actually, but now much more in my absence, which was a good thing, because we have seen with other epistles that he had to blame many churches, because as long as he was there, they would accept the epistle of the Christ, and the moment he turned his back on that church and went away, and then others came in and were preaching another doctrine, and the churches would fall away from the pure doctrine that Paul was teaching. This didn't happen in Philippi. I think it was the only church he had which was faithful to him, obedient to him, principle, obedient to him, even when he was away, even when he was in prison. So they didn't doubt and say, well, if he can't make the grade and is put into prison, there must be something wrong about his teaching. You know, it's the same thing as sometimes you say, well, if you see a teacher or a good practitioner, and that teacher or practitioner has to struggle, say, sometimes with some disease or some problem for a longer time, they say, well, something must be wrong with that person. Well, it isn't something wrong with that person. He's just working out something that he has to work out, and that's good. That's positive. But those churches at that time felt actually always that because, first of all, Paul wasn't an immediate disciple of Jesus, he wasn't really a good apostle. And second, because he had a thorn in his flesh, and because he was imprisoned over and over, wherever he went, he was imprisoned, and now he was awaiting perhaps even a death sentence, so something must be wrong with that fellow. And so they doubted it. And naturally you can see how he was rejoicing in the fact that the Philippians were obedient to the gospel in spite that he was away, in spite that he was in prison, in spite that he was in difficulties. I don't know anybody who does something big that does not get into big difficulties. I always feel that if somebody doesn't get into big difficulties, he's not worth the salt he eats. Because you have to get into trouble if you are pushing forward with a new idea, with a new paradigm. You have to have the misunderstanding of the world. You have to have, therefore, the persecution of the world. You have to have the ridicule of the world, or else you are not worth anything. So, we here also we get a terrific practical rule and guideline for us to see that we are not mistaken so quickly by the outward situation. So, yes, that verse is so big that I read it again because I haven't finished it again. Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but also much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. He could see that everybody individually has to work out his own salvation, and that is his individual job to do. He gets no salvation by just having a terrific good teacher or a terrific good practitioner. That may be even a stumbling block, because then one relies too much on that practitioner, and the better he is, the more you rely on it, and the more we rely on it, the less we work ourselves. And therefore, don't try to work out things ourselves, because that takes more energy, takes more time, takes more fear and trembling, And if we just can take, go to the telephone and ring up the practitioner and he puts things into order. This is a very great danger and has become the greatest danger in the Christian Science movement, and that's the reason why the movement goes backward. We had a time in the movement, when I think the time between, say, 1890-95 up to round about 40-45, that really the movement had a great development number-wise, also in membership and so on. Everything went well because of the healing. And it was John Dolly who already 15 years before saw something is wrong about that good healing business. People don't understand. You know how he said that when he was president of the Mother Church and went around the world from church to church, he said, well, the only thing I heard of everybody who talked to me who was his or her practitioner. He never heard that they were studying and finding out in the study, in the textbook, or in the Bible something new. And that made him aware that something was wrong. That something is wrong in so far that actually everybody must work out his own salvation. Therefore, when we started out on our own, we had as a high ideal not to go on in the same vein and try to have as many patients as possible and to heal as quickly as possible what the patient wants to be healed. We left the church because we had the other ideal, like here, teach the student that he can be his own practitioner. That does not mean that we leave everybody just on his own. We certainly support the efforts of a patient when he is really making an effort. We guide him perhaps much more in what he can do himself to solve the problem so that he experiences the solution through his own consciousness and can find confidence in his own understanding so that finally each one can say, I can work out any problem by myself. I have to work out my problem by myself right from the start. I had to do it. I never had to take a practitioner nor a doctor. So that makes us secure in what we do, even if sometimes something hangs on you that is difficult and gives some difficulty. That doesn't matter. We can have a thorn in our flesh and yet be a world savior. These little things don't matter at all. The bigger issues matter. So he could see that and could see, all right, you Philippians, you were obedient to my teaching. You did not ask how I get on. You did not ask that because I go through difficulties, you begin to question my authority. And he said to them, because fundamentally each one has to work out his salvation with fear and trembling. Some translations say against fear and trembling. Well, it means more or less the same. We know that when we are in a ditch, it is really that fear and trembling that comes on upon us. If it is now working out against fear and trembling or with fear and trembling, isn't more or less the same. So, and then this terrific statement that comes right afterwards giving the meaning why they can work out her soul salvation, namely 13, for it is God which worketh in you. God is working in you. Not you have to solve the problem. Not you have to demonstrate the problem. It's God that is working in you. And not only in one way, but in two ways. Namely, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. In the German rendering or translation, Luther translated even a bit nicer, I would say, though I don't know what the original says, but he says that, for it is God which worketh in you both to will and to fulfill his good pleasure. So you have the beginning and then mind and love. To say what God begins, he will also fulfill. God doesn't begin something and doesn't fulfill it, and leaves it on halfway finished. So this is a terrific point of principle. You feel it in your bones that we hear here, yes, if I'm one with that one principle and consciously know my unity with that one principle and that only principle, and that principle I know is the power of demonstration, is spiritual power, it's the only authority working in me, then I begin to feel really that what principle has begun, principle will also fulfill. And it is principle that works in me, and not my human will, my thinking, my right thinking, that works in me. 14, therefore, do all things without murmurings and disputings. Can you see that we usually don't do that? That when we are in a problem and it doesn't solve just like that, you see, I don't like that. That is not nice. It's agreeable, that, if it works like that. But you will always see that is much more of value where you have to work it out with fear and trembling. And it sometimes takes more time than if you go to the doctor and he gives you an injection. That working out with fear and trembling has within itself the opportunity to strengthen our consciousness in the principle of being and to strive and struggle and battle within oneself until one is humble enough to let really God do his own work. So don't be sad about if something doesn't work out at once. There may be a great, great blessing in it, such a great blessing which you would not have otherwise. So do all things without murmurings and disputing. Don't dispute, why don't I get healed? Why does it take so long? Why doesn't it solve the situation, solve itself? It is an occasion for spiritual growth in spiritual power. That ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke. Naturally, you know, if we murmur and dispute, then we are with rebuke. Then we see and we think, well, he isn't quite sure of his method. He isn't quite sure of his teaching. Or else he wouldn't murmur and dispute it and question it and hesitate. He doesn't give then an attitude of authority. So Mrs. Eddy says it's even sin to murmur over evil. That's sin. Why should we murmur over evil? If there is no evil, if we feel that there is only one God, then we should not even murmur over a situation, but should see it as a wonderful occasion to work out something which we otherwise would not work out. We would just leave it again there in an apathetical way and wipe it under the carpet again so that it's no more seen or heard until it comes up again. Yeah. 15, I read again, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world. So now he brings in the situation that he said, first he said, you are obedient to principle. Then he said, that's wonderful because you know that principle is the beginning and the fulfilling of everything. You know that and you don't murmur over it. And so you get a good reputation from the world. And that is also your protection in an evil world. Then the evil world around you, the crooked and perverse nation around you, cannot touch you. Then you prove that you are firmly grounded in the authority of principle. and then you are like lights in this world. Gosh, we really should be lights in this world where everybody now in the world fears the future, is in doubt of the future, says what is going to happen. The birth rate goes back because parents or grown-ups think, well, what's the use of bringing children into this world? What is their future? I don't want to give to our children such a future as I perceive. Well, this I don't judge that morally or humanly, but we have to be clear and certain that the world situation does not affect us in our certainty that either so or so, principle is working out his own plan, his own purpose, so that we are, so to say, lights in this world, that we stand fast and don't agitate as if we fear and doubt would have an abode within us. Holding forth the word of life, we should stick to that word of life. That's what I would like to see when I was talking to you on the general meeting, that we have to give birth to the future and not give in to the future and fear the future, but that we stand as a light in this world and say, no matter how high the storm is, how high the billows are, the storm is, we stand fast. We know that there is always an evolution going on. We don't know quite yet what that evolution will be, how it will evolve, if it is evolving in a more gentle way, or if a great crisis is necessary in order to bring forth the new birth. That we don't know. The only thing we have to know is that there is an impulsion of life at work that brings always forth a new era, a new paradigm shift, and therefore we have to stand to that word of God. So holding fast to the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. This is something that comes on everyone who is pioneering in an idea, that sometimes the suggestion comes in, have I been doing all that life work in vain? Will it really succeed? Will it really go on? Think of Jesus, the certainty that he had, that his life work will go on, though he did not nominate a successor. He didn't say, this one or this one will be my successor and will be the leader. He left it just in the providence of God. He left it without a written word, without stating really his theory or his principle, without stating that. The others did write. Jesus didn't write. Think of the confidence he must have had in the Christ idea. And so it is always that, like Mrs. Eddy, she too was thinking for a long time, how can I preserve really Christian Science? I must have somebody who is my successor. Perhaps she was thinking first she was thinking, if I have a son, and so he adopted the son, and naturally that was a flop. Then at one time she thought that perhaps Kimball could take the place, and then she saw also that Kimball passed on before her life, so that was taken away from her until she finally left it again in the hands of God and could see generic men will be my successor. And so it is with everyone that is pioneering forward. Sometimes he gets that weakness and feels he must have a personal successor, and every time that fails, and in every religion that fails, and mostly in every firm it fails, in every business it fails, mostly. But he said, I have, so that he did not run in vain, neither labored in vain. Well, he brings it up because he had some doubts within himself from time to time, said, what will become of my mission? Have I gone through all those hardships all in vain? Have I have my scars on the body just all in vain? I turn my back and then they go along other doctrines. This is always something that we experience. I experienced that many times when I opened up a new field. Think of that time when for the first time was anyway a flop when I came to America. It was a terrific flop. The second time, and I made up my mind no more to return to America. Again in 62, and I had a wonderful seminar in Pasadena, a terrific seminar in Pasadena, and I went home to Switzerland and turned my back on it. Many of those of whom I thought would build it further fell away. They went to goldsmiths and to all sorts, kinds of things. But there was a remnant in that class, and that remnant did it. Though at first I couldn't see it, I was absolutely disappointed after a year, two, three, and said to myself, never again. This was the last time I went to America. Never again. You turn your back and all the other doctrines come in. I didn't see the remnant. I didn't trust the remnant. I'm sorry to say that, but there was a remnant, and that remnant is still here. And that, from that point, something evolved slowly. It was premature in a way, but still the seed was sown. And so I had to change my thoughts again and said, I come back again. And so the third time I came back, I said, I come back every year at least once. And very often I came back twice a year. And so we are here. So this is what I said to myself too. Have I labored in vain or not? And so he says, no, you never labor in vain. 17, yea, and if I be offered upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all. For the same cause also do ye joy and rejoice with me. And then he had a kind of a side note that goes right to the end practically of this subject. Says, but I trust in the Lord. Naturally, again, you have that trust of principle in the Lord Jesus to send Timotheus shortly unto you, that I also may be of good comfort when I know your state. So he tells them that he sends his ambassador very soon. For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. So he had to say that the one he sends has really his trust, that he has authority, that they should accept him as an authority in place of Paul. For all seek their own. Now that's the opposite. He says that Timotheus is not somebody who seeks his own. He really wants to serve you. So for all the others, all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. But ye know the proof of him, of Timotheus, that as a son with the father, he has served with me in the gospel. You see, he wants to tell the Philippians that he sends an ambassador and that he has the authority. And he tells them he has the authority because he served me in Rome. He had served me in the gospel and also in Rome. Him, therefore, I hope to send presently, as soon as I shall see how it will go with me, when he sees which way the things will turn. But I trust in the Lord that I also myself shall come shortly. Can you see how he struggles always with the same thing? I hope I can come to you in person, but I'm not in the happy hunting grounds then. Yet I supposed it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, and companion in labor and fellow soldier, but your messengers, and he that ministered to my wants. So he says that the one who will bring the letter to the Philippians, that he had served also Paul and has shown himself to be a faithful servant. For he longed after you all and was full of heaviness because that he had heard that he had been sick. For indeed he was sick nigh unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I sent him therefore the more carefully, that when ye see him again, ye may rejoice, and that I may be the less sorrowful. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such in reputation, namely, because for the work of Christ he was nigh unto death, not regarding his life to supply your lack of service towards me. So he gives the authority to also to Epaphroditus, saying, he has proven himself in principle. He has proved himself to be a loyal servant to me. He had helped me, and he was nearly nigh to death, but he recovered because he had that longing in himself that he wanted to go to the Philippians and help the Philippians and strengthen the Philippians and comfort the Philippians about the situation in Rome. Yes. So this is the tone of principle. We can see, except for those many side remarks where really Paul was pouring out his heart to the Philippians about his situation, he was saying, well, I like you, Philippians, because you were obedient to the new doctrine, even when I was not there. What is your attitude? Work out your own salvation against fear and trembling. And he said, I see what happens within you. It is principle or God that is working in you, the will and to do the things of God according to his good pleasure. That what principle begins, principle also fulfills. And that is the certainty of principle, and on this I rely. Yes. This is the tone of principle. Again, we can see, comparing it with all the others, one sees that it takes up a completely different attitude or a problem and says, now at the point of principle, I can see that you Philippians, you really received the fullness of Christ, and you claimed that fullness of Christ even without my presence, even without regard to my difficult situation. And so that affected in you that you are working out your own salvation against fear and trembling. That has an effect in you that you know that whatever you had to work out, it will be principle that is, on the helm, that steers you, that what principle begins, principle will also fulfill in you. Yes.